Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Knowledge Podcast by Wahoo. I'm Neil Henderson, head of Wahoo Sports Science.
And I'm Matt Kasson, senior sports scientist. Today we're going to discuss fueling your training. This is a topic we're actually going to break into a couple parts. This episode specifically is going to focus on fueling before your workout.
All right, Mac. Well, we're going to start off with some basic stuff in the beginning. Moving your body, which is really what training is in some way. Mental training, maybe not moving your body, but actually using your brain does require some fuel. So this is actually still going to be useful there, that moving your body requires energy. And your body can only use a couple types of energy, predominantly to contract muscles. The two main things that we use as fuels are carbohydrate and fat. When we combine those with oxygen, we have oxidative metabolism, we get energy out of those. We can also break down carbohydrates without using oxygen to get some energy. It just can't be sustained for super long. Another topic, another time, right?
Yes. And during that topic, we'll discuss Neil's deep hatred for the term anaerobic.
Yes. And absolute truth to that, Mac. And hate is a strong word, I know. So you might remember in school being taught about, maybe Maslow's hierarchy and some of these things. As humans, we have, primary needs to stay alive. Water, food, shelter. Interestingly, oxygen didn't make that list, which is actually probably at the top of the list. Without oxygen, we definitely don't exist for very long at all. Like even shorter than if we don't have water or food or shelter. But that being said, water is one of the most important things that we do need to be taking in with some frequency to keep us alive. And when we exercise, we have some impacts on our body's need for water combined through these different things, including metabolism, digestion, and especially when it's hot or humid or warm, thermoregulation. Because when it's hot, we sweat water and fluid to cool us down through the evaporation of that. Does that make sense so far?
You lost me about a minute ago, but we'll keep it rolling. So, yes. Oxygen, big important thing here for fuel, for how your body efficiently produces energy. When we're, again, like you were saying, you're talking about carbohydrates and fats as fuel sources. We'll probably have a whole other episode about ketones and ketone bodies and all that stuff another time, but we're not going to get into that. As you said, the brain uses energy. It can only use carbohydrate or ketones, but your brain can only use carbohydrate. Your muscles can use carbohydrate or fat. And the forms that those take for carbohydrate are going to be your blood glucose, sugar in your blood, or glycogen, which is stored in the muscle themselves or in your liver. And as you're talking about with water, there's an interesting thing with glycogen where it's actually stored in your body in association with some water. And again, this is with something that you and I don't necessarily agree on the exact value, but I will say it's 3 grams of water per gram of glycogen.
Or 2.8, but we can round it to your 3. That's close enough for all intents and purposes. And keep in mind that glycogen is just basically chains of glucose together for a storage form. So,
and it's interesting, glycogen, once it's in your muscles, it actually can't leave the muscles. It has to be used there. Your liver can store glycogen, convert it to glucose, which goes into your bloodstream, so it becomes, blood sugar. So if you've got, lots of glycogen stored up in your biceps when you're riding a bike, it's not really going to help you out.
It's not going to go elsewhere. It's going to stay there locally. So if you get out of the saddle and start pulling the bike side to side, then you can liberate some of the glucose from those biceps. That would be fun.
Yeah.
But maybe not terribly efficient.
So again, coming back to oxygen, that's how we're turning these fuel sources into energy. So Neil, what's the difference between carbohydrates and fat when we're talking about oxygen consumption?
Oxygen consumption, or VO2, is one of the things that as we exercise at higher and higher intensities, we are utilizing more oxygen to break down more of these fuels. And interestingly, we get about 10% more energy yield when we're oxidizing carbohydrate than we do with a fat. And so when oxygen consumption is at its kind of highest level, which is the term we call VO2 max, at that high intensity, we want to be utilizing predominantly carbohydrate to get then the most ATP, which is the energy form that the muscle uses to contract, out of that fuel. And so we can look at this in a lab. We can do what we call indirect calorimetry, where we're measuring oxygen and carbon dioxide that you're exhaling as you exercise. And we see that at a low intensity, there's generally a pretty even mix of carbohydrate and fat. Yes, some individuals use a little more fat at a same intensity. Some people do use a little more carbohydrate at that same low intensity, and those shifts are probably due a little bit both to training responses and the kind of training that folks are doing, as well as their muscle fiber type. Individuals with more slow twitch fiber will be using a little bit more fat at a given intensity than somebody who has a little bit more fast twitch muscle fiber, somebody who's more of a sprinter type. But in either case, as we start to work harder, our total energy expenditure goes up, and we start to see a shift to greater and greater amounts of carbohydrate being utilized. And once we get to kind of around our FTP or threshold, we see almost exclusively all the energy being oxidized is coming from carbohydrate use. That's just human nature.
So it sounds like if you have a hard training session, you're going to want to be topped up on your carbohydrate stores.
Absolutely. When you're pushing at those higher intensities, it is carbohydrate that is the primary fuel you're using through that oxidative, as well as, again, the only fuel we can use in that non-oxidative or anaerobic pathway is carbohydrate. Interestingly, carbohydrate can only be then stored in the body in limited amounts, both in your muscle as well as, again, in the liver and the blood glucose. You only have so much, whereas fat, to a degree, we have almost an unlimited capacity, where having an extreme amount of extra fat carried on, you know, definitely doesn't help us go faster, but it is a fuel source that your body can store tens and tens of thousands of calories potentially, whereas carbohydrate, generally speaking, maybe around 2,000 calories or so for an average-sized person, we'll just say around 165 pounds or 75 kilos.
Yeah, and that energy density becomes really interesting when you talk about the relative size of the fuel tank, because, you know, fat in itself has almost, well, a little more than double the amount of energy per gram. So carbohydrate's about 4, fat's 9. But if you remember, we were talking about the glycogen being stored, it needs water in addition to it. So you're talking about 4 grams, really, or 3.8, as you might prefer to say.
2.8.
But with that 1 gram of...
With that 1, yeah.
1 so gram, total, so a total yeah. System mass, you can call it.
3.8, a.k.a. almost 4.
Of 4 grams... Or so if you do some quick math and divide 4 by 4, you get 1. So carbohydrate, you get 1 calorie per gram of storage capacity. And for fat, you get 9. So in terms of energy density, not only do you have a lot more of it stored, but it's 9 times as energy dense.
Absolutely. So again, carbohydrate has limits on how much we can store. And then with exercise, as we work harder, we're using more and more of it. So fueling... When we get ready to think about our training and preparing for training, we want to think about how we fuel and when, right? There's a couple key things to think about.
So when we look at this fueling window, the general rule of thumb that you'll hear is about 3 hours out, you want to have a substantial meal. Before we get too deep into, you know, what that meal should be made up of or the timing, it's really worth noting that the meal you have should be proportional not only to the training you have to do afterwards, but also your relative fitness. In terms of, you know, world tour riders, like someone like Rowan Dennis, who could deal about, he can sit along all day at 250 watts, just cranking along.
And all night.
So you give him night rides? Is that what you're saying?
No. He doesn't do that. He's not into the ultra stuff. He just tries to go fast.
You know, 250 for him is not super intense, but it's a lot of energy output. Some of you might only be able to ride 250 watts for an hour, or even just 20 minutes. And like we were saying, that's going to be 100% carbohydrate for you. But so you want to look at, you know, if you're riding all day at 100 watts versus 250 watts, the energy demand is quite different. So the fueling requirements are going to be different.
Definitely. For a short, low intensity session that you might be doing, your need isn't for a lot of energy, it's just for maybe more your hydration, just enough to kind of get you through that. And so the timing and the amount that you take in are also part of then that kind of calculus. If you're going out for a high intensity session that's going to be sustained fairly long, you need the most amount of kind of pre-workout fueling. When would be the ideal time that you might want to take in, and what are the kind of key things you want to take in there? Are there any things I want to think about in that meal getting ready for, say, a pretty long and pretty hard? Again, it's all relative. How much I can produce and what's really long. Maybe 3 hours is very long for me. For someone else, it might be 2 hours, and someone else, it might be 8 hours. But in that context, Mac, what would you say?
The considerations you want to take there are partially, again, like we were saying, 3 hours is generally a pretty good window to start fueling beforehand. It gets tricky as you go either earlier, like 4 hours, or you go closer, like 2 hours. You want to change the composition of what you're eating. So one thing to know is that fiber content, like higher fiber content, will slow down the rate of digestion. So that's where you get really, when you get complex carbs, some people call them slow burning carbs. It's because it takes longer for them to be processed, to be converted into glucose, to go into your blood. Fat will also slow down that digestive process. So when you're further out, it's okay to have a meal with greater fat content, higher fiber content. As that window closes and you go to like the 2 hour mark, lower fiber content and probably a little lower fat. Now, what happens, Neil, when you go beyond that or get closer than that 2 hour window?
In that case, you want to definitely simplify even more and really purposefully be reducing any kind of fat intake as well as even protein. So if you think of like carbohydrate is probably the fastest thing that your body can digest. Protein is kind of in the middle, and then fat is at the slower end of things. And then carbohydrate, you have that little bit of a difference between more of a simple or complex, and then a high fiber is kind of that continuum with the high fiber taking the longest time, a complex carbohydrate taking a little bit less, and then a simple type sugar, so like juice, would be in that simple, quick, fast digestion. So that, again, as you get into that quicker time between eating and training, you really want to stick to the simpler and definitely stay far away from the fat and proteins then.
Yeah. And so to be more scientific about this, what we're talking about here for these different rates of, you know, spiking your blood sugar, that's, you know, there's something called the glycemic index. So it's really a rating for how quickly a given food will increase your blood sugar. And so when we talk about these quick acting carbohydrates, they have really high glycemic index. They'll spike your blood sugar quickly, and then that'll drop down quickly as well. The lower glycemic index won't peak as high, won't peak as fast, but it will keep your blood sugar peaked for longer.
Yep. And there's one other element there, the total glycemic load, which is the glycemic index multiplied by the amount of that. So even if I have a relatively low glycemic index food, but I eat a lot of it, there's still a fairly high glycemic load because we're going to have an elevated response to that, insulin specifically, and that's going to be sustained longer because it's more of it to process. Whereas if I have a high glycemic index food, but I just have a little bit of it, it is a slightly more rapid response, but it's not going to be sustained as long. So it's not going to have this significantly catastrophic kind of long elevated, we'll say, insulin. And you know, what the problem with that is there's a little bit of a rebound. And what we want to think about then is the timing of what happens.
Yeah. So for that rebound, it's exactly when you get into that window of, say, like an hour out, you don't want to be eating, you know, those more complex carbohydrates with the lower glycemic index, because when you start exercising, your body moves blood away from your digestive tract to your working muscles. So if there's food, a big lump of porridge and fruit and nuts in your stomach when you start exercising, it's going to sit there for most of the training session. So you don't really want to, unless your GI tract is, you know, a steel trap and can put anything down there, then that's a different situation. But for most people, that's going to cause a lot of discomfort. GI issues are never fun when you're not training, and they're even worse when you are training.
For sure. And the intensity has a major factor there. So the higher the intensity, the more we get that shunting away from your stomach. So if you're just going out like at an easy, slow intensity, you know, if you're just noodling along, well, actually, in most cases, you might not see as much problem with that GI discomfort. But on the other hand, if you are going out and doing a race, then you're definitely going to be at risk.
Yeah, so that's why when you get to that short hour, you don't want to be eating a really big, hefty meal. But you might think, okay, well, I have a short amount of time, so I should just take high glycemic index, high glycemic load, some really simple sugars like 60 minutes before a workout. Why is that not a good idea?
Yep, you're going to get that significant increase in insulin, which what insulin does is it's pulling the glucose out of your bloodstream and taking it out into the muscles to be stored as glycogen as well as into your liver. So what's going to happen is your blood glucose level will plummet, and it can plummet pretty quickly and leave you hypoglycemic, which is that bad feeling. Like a lot of times I get kind of that shaky feeling if I've had a lot of high glycemic load and I'm just sitting there at rest, I get that big drop in blood glucose. I get a little bit shaky. Sometimes you get that little bit of sweat and things like that. And that is definitely not a good place to be as you start to exercise.
Yeah, you get a sugar crash. You've all seen kids run around, get some sort of... Yeah, exactly.
Yep. So typically takes about 30 or so minutes from the time that you eat a higher glycemic index meal to getting that glucose. And that's at rest. Keep in mind that when we start exercising, once we start a training session, everything's a little bit different. You don't get that same insulin response. So this is really the before you start training things that are very much important to think about your timing. So I would say the worst time to be taking in a high glycemic load or high glycemic index food before training is around 30 minutes, but 20 to 40, 45 minutes is probably that danger zone where you really want to avoid a high intake. You could have a little bit of water at that point and then wait until you either start your training session or just like 5 minutes before a sports drink or a gel. You're not going to have that big insulin response because you're going to start exercising.
Yeah, exactly. When you start exercising, your muscles react in a way they kind of open up to allow sugar from your blood to move into them. So you don't get that same sort of peak insulin response when you start exercising, when you've just consumed something. That'll come up later when we talk about fueling after a ride, that sort of receptive nature of muscles after exercise. But again, for this beforehand, we're talking about, 4 to 3 hours out, you can do a big, more complex meal, high glycemic load, preferably with lower glycemic index foods. As that window closes, you want to shift away from higher fiber content, away from fat, until you get to that 1 hour, that, like you were saying, that 20, 45 minute window. You really need to be careful about what you consume at that time.
Exactly. So how long and hard you go impacts how much and what the composition should be. What you're taking in there needs to be relative to the timing before you start your session. Primary thoughts and considerations.
And this is something that you definitely want to, if you're training for a big event or something, these are strategies to practice beforehand. One thing we'll say without fail is never try something new on your event day. So if you're not used to a big old bowl of porridge and fruit, then don't try that on your big event just because it's a big ride and you have been told that's what to do.
Exactly. And I would say the other important thing here is we didn't really talk about a lot of very specific foods that you need to have this or that. There are a lot of different options and opportunities that can work within these contexts to give you what you're looking for. And so there is no perfect food. And so that's something really important. And again, everyone does have some different nutritional needs. So make sure if you have any special considerations that you do work with a registered dietitian to make sure that you're fueling based on what your true needs are. And with that, I think we're going to let this one rest, but we will be coming back to talk more about then your fueling needs during your training, as well as then what kind of refueling you need when you finish training to optimize your recovery and be ready for your next session. That's it for another episode of the Knowledge Podcast. We'll see you next time.